Heaps of fun. Yeah. Listening to the business show on Radio Blue Mountains
because you can't actually sing it. That's what I like about it, see?
Well, you can just sing the chorus. It's the one line. Yeah. It's the one line.
And you watch people trying to go blah, 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 blah.
How'd they go?
Blah, blah, blah. We weren't doing that, were we?
Welcome, Karen.
Hello.
Karen Lister from Uni Real Estate is joining us today.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about overcapitalization, which I got very excited about because I don't know a lot about. But then you did some research for today and then you blew your mind and you completely changed your focus.
Oh, well.
Do share. Well, what did you learn?
I decided I was going to talk about overcapitalizing, and to do that, there was this direct link to the median price. Because obviously, I think if you were buying something and you didn't want to overcapitalize, you'd look to see what the average was and try and buy on that low end. So when I went digging, I came up with some really interesting information.
I'm all ears.
All ears.
Because I'm on the market at the moment to buy something. So educate me, Karen.
Well, it just blew my mind what the median house prices have gone to. So, you know, Lura obviously is the top at 652. That's the median, which is quite remarkable to me. So that was an increase of 5% this year. Yep. Obviously, we haven't finished the year.
So we're talking the previous 12 months or you're just talking in 2016?
This year.
Yep. So from January to now.
And this was from APM, so, you know, Australian Property Monitors.
Yep.
So there's been 77 properties sold this year in Lura. Last year, admittedly the full year, 168.
Wow.
So what a shortage of stock we're showing.
Yeah.
Wentworth Falls is next. It's shown the biggest growth as it normally does. So 9.1% it's shown. 625,000 median house price.
Wow.
And 63 properties sold versus 189 last year.
Wow.
Now, as I said, obviously there will be a catch-up, but there's no way it's going to hit anywhere near that 189.
No. It's about 50%, isn't it?
It's huge. Yeah. And that's what's holding these prices. That's what's holding your prices. Lawson's the big, you know, the dark horse where it's come up. 515 is Lawson's median
house
price.
That's crazy.
So, you know, it went up 9% this year, but last year it went up 20-odd. So, you know, for those of us who've been saying Lawson's going to boom, we've missed it, haven't we? Blackheath next. Oh, and sorry, Lawson, there's been only 26 properties sold this year.
In Lawson.
75 last year.
Wow.
So, I mean, look, you know, there could be, you know, this is, I've compiled these from APM. So there may be a little adjustment, but not a lot. Blackheath's 500,000. So, you know, Lawson is bigger than Blackheath and Katoomba.
Wow.
You know, now it's not that many years ago.
But that wouldn't have been the case at all.
No way that
so
was the case.
So what happens when, okay, so this low stock, basically for the laymans out there, which I am one of those, it means that there's no houses being sold, right? People aren't selling.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? Do the prices stay stable because people aren't selling? And if everyone suddenly started selling next year, what does that do to this property market up here? Does the price come down?
Well, obviously, I don't have a crystal ball.
No, but
and I don't like to make sweeping statements.
No, sorry,
that was a sweeping question, wasn't it?
Karen, no one's going to hold you to that. I'm talking in general to understand how it works.
Well, it's like any market. If you've got an abundance.
Supply and demand.
Yeah.
Supply and demand, sure.
Look, at the moment, all you've got to do is look at what there is to sell, and there's very, very little. What there is to buy, sorry. Very, very little. Anything that's been on the market for any period of time, and I'm talking, you know, more than a few weeks, in my opinion, is overpriced because
otherwise
they're just going.
Yeah,
you know, obviously you know that really high end is a little different.
Yes, yeah.
But I'm talking sort of
these median
under
house
mil,
prices, yeah,
under a mil.
Yep.
Which even we were just saying, Peter. You know, to be saying under a mil a few years back.
I know.
Now the mills just become the norm up in the mountains.
What?
You know,
what is that?
Yeah, but you know, we'll see what happens over the next couple of weeks. Kids have just gone back to school. So, you know, normally October, November are good months. But if people don't have anything to buy, they get very anxious about not having anything to – like not selling. Mm. I suppose.
Yeah, I would imagine that would just be a cycle that just keeps like going around with itself because you might – like as you say, be thinking about selling your house. But if you know you can't buy your next, because everyone wants to go better, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're not going down.
Well, a lot of downsizing, though, happens, you know, because of the demographic in certain areas up here. So there is downsizing, you know, kids have left home, you know, they want to sell the big five-bedroom and downsize to a three or whatever. But maybe they go up in quality, perhaps, you know. Admittedly, if you're buying and selling in the same market, but I suppose it depends what sort of equity you have. And if a lot hits the market, and I don't think a lot will, just taking it on how many market appraisals I'm doing and
when
whatever.
You go back and look at those figures from the year previous, it'd be interesting to know, and you may know off the top of your head, kind of what's the norm? Because does it mean that last year when there were so many properties turning over, that that's kind of just anyone who ever was thinking about doing it, they've done it. So that's got to happen.
People will always buy and sell though. Is that what you mean as far as selling?
Yeah, just the fact that those that kind of, did they jump in because they thought we're going to get a good price? Was it like, what kind of market was it that was moving? Was it investors offloading stuff? Was it families that were upgrading? And you know, like, I mean, you could dig forever, couldn't you and try and analyze it.
I think when times are tough up here, we saw a lot of people get out of weekenders. You know, when there was sort of that GFC, a lot of people couldn't justify hanging on to a place that they didn't come to very often. So there was a lot of that. Holiday lets a huge business again, so people are buying in for that. So it's not necessarily residents. There's a lot of money coming out of Sydney, and they may be keeping their Sydney homes, but they're buying weekenders up here and either holiday letting them or sitting them there again. But it's different money to that long-term mountain resident or holiday.
Airbnb has now become the largest hotel chain in the world with not one single property they own. Which
like
tells
Uber.
You exactly, which tells you where, like, you know, more properties being bought for holiday lets and things like that will happen.
Well, I think too, if you do it well, if you do the holiday let thing well, and they historically they do need to be large to make good money, they need to be large, because the little ones, that I don't know, they tend to go to a hotel. But you can certainly make more money than what you do with ongoing rent, because as much as the rental market is better than what it was as far as return, it's still not Sydney return. You've really got to be pretty clever to neutrally gear something up here in this market.
And then you've also got to be able to substantiate, because obviously that's not an ongoing rental too. So from a finance perspective, you kind of need to – it's and you've got to be for your holiday letting, obviously you've got to be more available. And for me, that's very much in the too hard basket. I'd never
– Oh, I'm the same.
Never sort of
– Somebody said to me recently, we're going to put a garage and studio on, and a friend's and another friend's doing $35,000 a year on their holiday let, and I said, I couldn't be bothered. I just couldn't be bothered for that, because your outgoings, and that's just, once again, it's just my opinion, but I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, if you did it as a business, then
still a lot of work.
It
really is.
Well, it's hospitality, isn't it? And hospitality is like,
Changing sheets, getting things.
You have to be on it, and people arrive, and the stove doesn't go on, or they haven't got enough wood, or they keep the central heating on all weekend and you get $1,000 heating. But there's all those
sort of
situations that arise.
It's like anything. People think, oh, that would be easy.
Yeah. Oh, because, it's good money.
And then all that.
Good money doesn't just come. There's always hard work that comes with good money.
Like real estate, they say that. I'd love to be a real estate agent. Small
business. Small business. Oh, I'm just going to start a business. How hard can it be?
Yeah. I could do. Why not?
You know, I used to get that. I used to pack gift hampers, right? And they're like, oh, that's got to be so easy. Well, chickens, I can tell you now, it's actually harder than it looks.
Everything's
got a skill.
And do you know what I find in my business? And I had this exact conversation with A, one of my team this morning, and B, a customer that I saw on the weekend. And the expectation in my world that people always apologize for not knowing this stuff. And I say to them, you don't cut your own hair. You don't do your own dentistry.
Completely ignorant. And Pete looks at me across the table and says, I know. Sometimes. I have no idea. And I don't
profess that.
And I shouldn't know. I haven't got a clue.
Same with real estate. Yeah. Like people, you know, they do. They sort of think, oh, that's easy. I just got to stand there and show our property. Yeah. Well, no. You know, like in your case, it's event management, if you sort of classed it in that, there's a little bit more, it's obviously a little bit more work in coordinating and stuff like that.
Oh, but yeah, what it appears. It looks so easy.
It's a lot of balls so in the air, easy. Isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of balls.
Constantly.
With anything that we do, and you're the same with what you do as well, Pete. Absolutely.
Know. Anyway. But, you know, I mean, that's what we love about small business, isn't it? It was like what we were talking about with Julie, you know, the fluidness of small business and the fact that you're so adaptable, you know, those of us who are in small business
and
are so adaptable.
Changing markets and changing landscapes
all the time. But you do have to all the time, don't you? It is one of the big advantages of being a small business that you can change tack instantly.
Yeah.
You don't have to go through a long chain of
management.
I couldn't
go back to that.
I couldn't go back to that.
That would do my head in.
Yeah.
Actually, I did do that temporarily when I was the chair of the PNC. I remember the principal saying to
me, "You were good.
You're going to find this quite difficult because you just want to get things done and it has to go through committee process." And it's kind of like, and you'd be talking about something and you only met once a month and like 6 months into it and you're like, oh,
you're still trying
to
get a
result.
We're still trying to get a result to
get the action happening.
Well, I think I've said before, that was my commitment to my child when I had my son, was to never do canteen and never do the PNC, and I'm happy to say I never did.
totally understand.
I did lots of other things, but not that.
No,
so you're a very good
either.
Girl.
Well, yeah.
A bit of a sucker.
Go you, mother of the year.
No, it was because it was my second time parent, and the first time I dropped my son off and I didn't even know anyone at the school. So this time around I thought, I'm going to let...
It's peaceful that way.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I learned. Would I do it again? I don't know that I would, to be honest.
It's like anything, isn't it? And it's that say exactly what you said, Karen, before about, you know, the balls in the air. And it's the same with your parenting. You know, just that same thing, juggling it and
working with those kinds of community events, not so much with what we're doing with a board, but with, say, a Chamber of Commerce, you have all different levels of experience of what people can actually bring. Mm. And whilst that can be great for diversity, that's not great for knowledge. So, you know, I spent the first little while explaining to people that the canteen, which was a non-profit organization, needs to be able to turn a profit to be viable, and they thought that I was driving home business principles into a non-profit canteen. I was like, no.
Yeah.
If you look at the figures, the PNC has been propping up this canteen for the last 3 years to the tune of $8,000 a year.
Yeah.
And that's, I said, that's your fundraising money.
That's
that's your fundraising money going to that. Oh, God, took a little while to get people to understand.
Anyway, well, back on the chamber then. So don't forget, everybody, that...
yes, what are we reminding people?
Are you coming to the awards, Karen?
Oh, I knew you'd put me on the spot.
So is that a no?
Have I bought a ticket? No.
Oh.
When is it?
It's Friday.
I do keep getting my emails.
You must come. It's a fantastic event.
Do I have to frock up?
It's a frock up night.
It's a frocking up night, for sure. But it should be fun.
Anyway,
we've got the awards coming up.
Thank you for coming in anyway this week.
We do.
Thank you, Karen. That was, as per normal, a very learning experience.
Illuminating. Is that the word?
Illuminating. I love it. Thank you.
An illuminating learning experience.
And we can talk more on Friday night about that. So that's awesome.
Oh, she's good.
How smooth was that?